Welcome to The Right Psych, a podcast geared towards medical students to learn about careers in psychiatry. My name is Keenan Clausen, and myself and a few other medical students from UBC have assembled to interview psychiatrists from a diverse array of subspecialties in order to explore the enormous breadth of practice in this exciting and evolving field of medicine. We hope that you discover what could be the right psych for you.
Welcome to another episode of The Right Psych. My name is Polly Ng, and I have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Rosemary Ozotu Abu today. Dr. Abu is currently a general adult psychiatrist with a special interest in old age psychiatry. She trained at College of Medicine, University of Benin, and completed her residency in the Southeast Regional Training Program in Ireland. She practiced as a general adult psychiatrist in Ireland before coming to BC, and she is currently practicing in Smithers.
Thank you again for being part of this. To begin, what drew you into psychiatry?
Well, I had a number of professors in medical school who used to help us prepare for exams. And then when I was in my final rotation in the last year doing psychiatry, I actually met one of these professors in the psychiatry ward. And it struck me that such an intelligent man could suffer with quite a severe mental illness because he had bipolar disorder with psychosis and mania. And so that was what made me feel like we needed to have good doctors too, who could care for patients who get sick. And it was my first exposure to the reality that it's not only a lower socioeconomic group that could suffer mental illnesses like I had believed beforehand, or drug users, or people who somehow brought it upon themselves. And so I wanted to be able to give back, because this man in my mind was instrumental to maybe me even passing a lot of those my exams beforehand to get to final year. So that put that thought in my mind that if I had a chance, I would do psychiatry for residency. And I think that's what led me into it. The other reason would also be that there's a lot of stigma in Nigeria and African countries, as there is even here in Canada, maybe to a smaller degree. Once it's mental illness, it's almost like you sweep it under the carpet and you forget the person. And so again, I wanted to just make sure that I could be part of the difference, I guess.
That's interesting that one person changed your perspective like that. And totally hear you about stigma around mental health. I'm from Hong Kong myself. And last time I was there, there was someone who was pretty clearly having a break with reality, and they were totally being ignored by everybody else around them. How come rural psychiatry?
During my residency, which I did in the Republic of Ireland, we had to do a certain amount of urban rotations and half the same amount of rural rotations. So to start with, I wasn't very happy, you know, because I was training in Dublin and in the south of Ireland. Once I started the rural rotations and met rural patients and experienced rural living, it grew on me. The pace is slower. You get to know patients more. They're very appreciative. There's very little insults or, you know, things being thrown in your face. And I think there's also more flexibility in terms of your practice. You have more control and autonomy in how you run your clinics and set them up. And once you get away from the urban life living, you suddenly realize that there were a lot of silly things about it, like the time you spend in traffic, the time you spend trying to get from one place to the other. There's a lot of politics and bureaucracy in big medical departments and hospitals. And it's not that great for your children, I think, in terms of how many experiences they can really have. For example, in rural Ireland, you could canoe, you could fish, you could, you know, kind of like what you can do here in rural BC. The environment is beautiful, right? There's a lot of nature and kids can cycle everywhere, and you don't have to worry about always having them chaperoned or helicoptered around. Once I experienced that, I started to realize each time I went back to the city for a big posting in an urban setting, I wanted to get out. And so towards the end of my residency, I selectively preferred the smaller locations for my rotations, and there are benefits too financially to choosing a rural job when you finish, because they might help you with some of your debts or that kind of stuff. So I think when you think about it from that perspective, and just housing is cheaper, you know, you can get independent financially, I think, a lot quicker when you start your practice in the rural setting compared to maybe urban settings, because you can build the same or earn the same, it's a fixed salary or a fixed fee for service bill, but you're paying so much for housing and all this other stuff in the city that you really can't break even. And I think overall, just in terms of your mental health and that work-life balance, it's actually easier to achieve in the rural psychiatry session, I think, than the urban.
Sounds like there's a lot of benefits to practicing in rural areas. And it's interesting that in your residency, the breakdown was 50-50 between urban and rural. That's a very even spread. So you've already touched upon a lot of the advantages of practicing rurally. It sounds like the lifestyle is amazing, slower pace, great environment, great benefits for family, and also financially, it's cheaper. And you also mentioned professionally. Could you expand a little bit on the professional part, what it looks like and what you like about it?
So specifically, I work in Smithers. We're a small group of physicians in my town. I'm the only specialist until we got a radiologist in the last 2 months. And then we have about 26 family doctors, and we're very collegial. We are very close. We have a medical staff meeting that meets once every month. We do initiatives together through the specialist services committee. And I partner with them sometimes when they have initiatives that they want to work on through the GPSC. I think it's just easier to work in a rural setting because relationships get built up. And so you're not picking up the phone to a stranger. And that makes a whole difference when you're talking about just collegiality and focusing on the one purpose that is common to both of you, and not having those schisms that are very common in medicine, where we all become big bosses in our small niches. And then if anyone tries to tell us to do something different, we are not exactly very collaborative. I think it's a lot easier to achieve that in a small setting. Like I said before, you have a lot more autonomy. You can sort of say, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. This is how I'm going to deliver my service. And you'd inform the family doctors maybe in a letter that goes out to everyone. And I find that they're so grateful to just have you in that community that they're very careful not to overburn you, right? They don't call you beyond certain times in the night. They are more than happy when you say, oh, I can't do it tomorrow, but I can do it in 2 weeks' time. They are like, I don't even know if this is a reasonable thing to be referring to you, but I just thought I should ask anyway. It's a lot different to when I worked in the cities, where it was more, you expect you here, you're not here at this time, and it's this whole big question and answer series that you're doing with some nurse manager or some hospital manager or some CEO. It's different in rural settings, I find. And then I think you can also get a sense of who your population is, the population you're serving. You can develop the service to a degree. For example, when I came to the job I'm in right now, we did not really have it properly set up or properly staffed. And so based on my experience working in bigger teams, I could say, okay, what we have is great, but this is what I'm hoping we can achieve maybe in 4 or 5 years' time. And in that time, I've been here about 4.5 years now. You know, we've set up a dialectic behavior therapy service, a cognitive Wow. behavior therapy service. We have some wellness and recovery programs running. We have a bereavement and support program, as well as basic support services, like we call it the SIL program, which is run by the occupational therapists and some life skills workers, just to get people up and about and exercising maybe 2 or 3 times a week. And those all started because as a psychiatrist, you can ask for things in conjunction with a small rural team and put it on the list for what you want to ask your health authority for. And when you have the number of patients since your clinic has started building up to maybe 1,000 or a couple of thousands, they listen more when there's a psychiatrist there. So we've been able to get an occupational therapist hired. We have on our wait list now that we need a psychologist, and it's something that I bring up all the time at any management meetings I go to. I've just found that there's a lot of reward in feeling that you were part of that development in terms of the service that you're delivering. You have more control or autonomy, and I think the health authorities are a lot more open to whatever it is you suggest. And sometimes you find yourself feeling, I didn't say anything spectacular. How come the reaction is so appreciative? But I think that's the difference to being in a big city where it almost feels like we've heard everything, we've done everything, we've seen everything. Just keep quiet and do your job.
I actually thought that working in a rural setting, you'd be very busy because I understand that there are a few rural psychiatrists. And so I assume that the caseload would be very large and you would have less flexibility.
It is quite busy. So we're about 4 psychiatrists for the entire Northwest BC.
Oh, wow.
That's from Prince Rupert down to nearly Vanderhoof, just which is an hour or so from Prince George. To drive it would be at least 8 hours by car, covered by just 4 of us. So two psychiatrists are in the psychiatric hospital in Terrace. Mm-hmm. And then my colleague is in Prince Rupert and myself, I'm in Smithers. And between us, provide the on-call service for psychiatry for this area and all the outpatient services as well. So it's quite busy. In addition to your outpatient clinic, which we tend to run almost every day, we also have on average 1 or 2 weeks every month when we're on call in rotation, and we rotate every week. But it's manageable in the sense that call is done virtually. A lot of our service is provided virtually because the catchment area is so broad. Patients had to drive to you and drive back for every 30-minute meeting, you won't get anyone seen, right? Because it's quite rural and people don't have transport sometimes. So we can do a lot virtually. I think even before COVID, 30% of my practice was virtual. So it was very easy to transition during COVID to just doing more of my work virtually. And most of our on-call is done virtually as well, because we would look after patients in all the general hospitals in the Northwest, right? And then you would go in person to your local hospital, you know, assuming you have some patients admitted there. So it works. And I think because we work so well with the family doctors, they're able to just call us and we tell them what to do to start, and then we can schedule the patient in. And they're happy as well to run with us and co-manage those patients so we can get people out of hospital quicker. It's a different kind of practice, like I said, compared to the city. We don't have so many frequent flyers who just have substance use issues. And even when we do, we're able to work together collaboratively to get them into treatment and to advocate strongly that the health authority provides that treatment. And because compared to the city, we don't have the same amount of people, I think it works out that you can get care for your patients a little easier.
On the topic of patient population, who do you see and what sort of psychiatric condition do you find in your practice?
So I see a little bit of everything, because as the only psychiatrist in a big area, you end up seeing children. Initially, it wasn't part of the plan, but when there's just no service for children at risk, you will end up seeing children who are suicidal, or one is children with ADHD or conduct type disorders, children with addictions, and then children with serious mental health problems like bipolar disorder, or the prodromal phase of what appears to be a psychotic illness, or even a substance-related psychotic illness. So you see that. And then, of course, you see the elderly population as well, because we don't have a geriatric psychiatrist, and that is one of my areas of interest. And so I work at the nursing in town and do a clinic there once every month. So I see the 55s and over, because some of them are in those places a lot younger, because we also have about 10 mental health beds in that nursing home that we got from when Riverview Hospital closed.
Right.
So they would have been people who lived in Riverview for many years before that hospital closed with quite serious mental health conditions. And then, of course, I see what would be the common adult psychiatry type population, people with bipolar, schizophrenia, a lot of anxieties and depression, and people at risk of self-harm. And then, of course, the rarer conditions like dissociative identity disorders and maybe eating disorders and sexual related type paraphilic kind of disorders. So, yeah, you kind of see everything. It's never boring, as they say in psychiatry.
It does sound like it keeps it very interesting, because it sounds like you see everybody from cradle to grave, you know, children, adults, seniors, and then, of course, the different conditions that span that huge population.
Yeah, you get to know families, right? Like if you're looking after someone's dad, you get to know the children who may be nurses themselves or social workers themselves or, you know, therapists themselves. And you get to know their wives. And then down the line, you may end up seeing a child from the same family. So it's not quite what you've seen in specialist settings in the city where you just see the patient and that's it. It's almost like a family medicine experience when you're the only psychiatrist in a small town, right? After a while, you're like, is that the same name? That name sounds familiar. Are they related?
That's neat. And like you said, you just get to know people better because you know the entire community.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you've mentioned a little bit about the team that you work with, so a group of GPs, and then it also sounds like you've brought on board more allied health. Could you describe the team a little bit and how it works together?
I work out of a community mental health center, and there's also addictions in my service. So initially when I started, we had one family doctor who was offering an opiate agonist program. And we worked out of the same community setting. And then we have 6 social workers who are mental health counselors. And then myself, and we had a nurse manager who has a lot of acute psychiatry experience. And since then, we've got the occupational therapist. And there's a dietitian who is a community dietitian, but she sees patients for us sometimes. And then we have community paramedics who we can refer mental health patients who also have medical comorbidities like COPD or history of strokes or MIs or diabetes and stuff like that. And they'll go home and monitor a lot of things that would like monitored for us. And then, of course, there's the family doctors who work independently, but because they're in the community and they all refer to me and we are part of the same medical staff meeting, it works well. And we have team meetings, usually very brief ones every day before we start, like 5-10 minutes, just to know what's going on, who was admitted overnight to the hospital, who showed up at the day center, who is not coping well at home, post-discharge, that kind of stuff. And then we start the day, and if they have patients that they're working with in counseling and they need some clarification or direction, they can just stop me in the corridor during the day. I think it works very well together. And then we have a bigger meeting once every month where other places can phone into us with their questions, right? Because it's rural and Smithers sort of is now the hub because I'm based there. But there are towns like Hazeltine and smaller places like Kitimat or the First Nations communities. There are many of them, like 3 or 4. The health centers in those locations, they usually just have one nurse and a visiting family doctor. So they can take advantage of those once a month meetings that last for about an hour to bring patient cases that we would talk about and give them a detailed care plan almost. And then they can run with that. And so because of that, there's been a sharing and exchange of knowledge and information and just that ability to communicate better.
That's amazing that such a small team of people serve such a broad area. And it sounds like technology is a big part of making it work, but also just getting together on a regular basis, like you said, to share expertise. So I was wondering, rural practice sounds amazing, but what are the challenges?
Well, I think one of them goes without saying, because it's a small town and you get to know people very well, they also get to know you very well. And so sometimes you just want to go get milk. and you'll be stopped and you have to say hello, you know, and you need to take longer saying hello in a rural town than in the city.
Yeah.
And so just a run for milk can easily become a consultation, right? Or you want to just go out anonymously in your track pants or jogger bottoms, but no, you can't really because you're the rural doc and that's not how people should see you. So that's one, I guess. And then I guess the other ones are you need to be more aware of confidentiality, because even just a harmless chat about, gosh, I had an interesting patient today. This happened and that happened. And it's not like you're giving names or even you're being very specific with identifiable information, but because it's such a small town, how many middle-aged or teenage people will have bipolar in that week, right? So just by saying the diagnosis and the age range, you may already have reached confidentiality, right? And a lot of the nurses may also be related to the person you're talking about or close friends with the person you're talking about. And so you have to be really mindful that if that conversation is not within the immediate treating team, once you are out of that setting, you need to not really talk about your work. Mm. So I think that's another drawback. I think you might get away with being a little less tight-lipped when you work in the city compared to rural areas. And then I think some other thing that we're trained about, you know, the ethical boundaries, for example, not buying a car from your patient or not employing your patient to be your landscaper and things like that, or not buying groceries from your patient might seem very straightforward when you work in Vancouver. Yeah. But when you work in a small town of, you know, less than 3,000, 4,000 people, it becomes a little harder to follow those ethical boundaries, right? Because if you like organic produce, well, you're going to be buying probably from your patient or your patient's family. You just need to be a lot more careful about things like that. For me, what I find too, and maybe this is not such a drawback, because I think most doctors keep it small anyway. Our friends end up being doctors. Sometimes our partners even end up being doctors. But I was going to say, it's not quite as easy to make friends in a small town, because again, you want to be careful, right? Because if you're too close to certain people, then you might run the risk of other patients not feeling comfortable sharing things with you in consultation, because they see that you're in this other person's house every evening and they're starting to worry, are you going to talk about them when you're there, right?
It sounds like the challenges are essentially the flip side to some of the advantages of rural practice, that closeness, the small community. There is also a challenging side to that.
Yeah. And of course, we should all work hard to always put our best selves forward. But I think it's more costly if you have a bad day when you're hangry and you lash out at a patient or something. It spreads so quickly because it's such a small town. So I think there's even a bigger call on us as physicians to deal with patients with respect and be really mindful of the privilege that we have as doctors serving the community.
Good lessons for everybody. What is it like being a person of color in a small community in BC? Because I like the cultural diversity in the larger setting, and I just worry that that will be a limitation in small communities.
Yeah. That's a really good question, actually. I think diversity is good. I think it always makes everything easier and richer. And yes, when you're in a small place, there might be less diversity to start. But I think you being there might actually attract more people there. When I joined this team, we had the two African psychiatrists here, who are Canadian, of course. And now, potentially, there's a fifth one that might be coming, who is also an IMG. So I think it does make it less scary for a minority doctor to go into a small community when there are other minority doctors, right? Mm-hmm. And I think once you get to a small community, you're often surprised that it's more diverse than you thought it would be from the outside. For example, when we moved here, I was really worried about how many African kids would be in my kids' schools, but they're actually more than I've seen in some of my friends who actually stay in bigger places. Like, Victorian. And then I think in terms of food and groceries, the world is such a small place now. A big part of working in rural psychiatry is making sure you go to a lot of conferences because you actually get grant support. Mm-hmm. I don't think you get quite the same when you're in a bigger city. Mm-hmm. And so once you're in those conferences, you can always find a Korean grocery store or a Taiwanese one or an African one. And so mm-hmm. you can buy the food and a lot of it gets couriered. Even if you don't want to travel, you can just pick up the phone, order it, they'll courier it via DHL or FedEx for you. Mm-hmm. So it's not as far as it was back in the day. I don't think I've had more racism in a rural community versus a bigger one mm-hmm. during my training or even during my work as a specialist. So I think mm-hmm. it's probably just a myth to worry about some of these things, because once you're in that community, you figure it out because you find other Asians or, you know, other Africans who you yeah. can say, hey, where do you guys get this? Where right. do you guys do this? Or do you guys have an African Christmas party? Or do you, you know, you just find that there's so much more there. And I think people are more willing to also embrace cross-culturally mm-hmm. in a small place than in a big place.
I'm so happy to hear that. Those were a lot of my worries, actually. You just totally addressed all of them. Now, actually, way more excited to try rural psychiatry.
We'll be happy to have you. And when you're coming, if you ski or if you snowboard or hike, just bring all your gear.
Amazing. What are some things that you want medical students to know about psychiatry and practicing rurally that you think that we might not know?
Even though I wanted to do psychiatry and I hoped I would get the opportunity to, there was still that fear in my mind about, gosh, psychiatry feels like the Cinderella specialty. We get less money in terms of funding. Mm-hmm. The resources are even less in terms of what we need to do our jobs compared to other medical specialties. So I wondered, you know, when I was going into psychiatry, would it be the same? Would I just not have respect from my colleague? You know, you hear things like she's not even a real doctor and stuff like that. But it's been respectful. I find that your colleagues may not understand what you provide until they need what you provide. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you suddenly see the respect, because I think what you have in psychiatry is that you have your basic medical knowledge, which every doctor has. But because you then do another 6 years in psychiatry in your residency, you have something many doctors don't have, mm-hmm. that ability to look at things from a very lateral and broad perspective, that line, you know, which is not just biological. You know the biological as a physician, but as a psychiatrist, you also know the social and you know the psychological, and you even know the cultural and the transcultural. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know the epistemological and all those kind of higher realms of thinking, right? Mm-hmm. So you can bring a lot, a team, even when you're working with other patients who also have cancer or lupus or chronic pain, even epilepsy. People always think there's such a separation when you're in medical school between psychiatry and medicine, but mm-hmm. it's not. It's just a continuum. And I think it's because the curriculum isn't introduced early enough in medical school mm-hmm. that we don't really see that a lot of these so-called medical illnesses mm-hmm. have a neuropsychological sequelae or projection in terms of their lifespan. So if you think about lupus, end-stage lupus can actually be psychosis.
Oh.
And until you see a patient like that in medical school or in your medicine, you're never going to realize that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with epilepsy. Intraictally, postictally, there can be a lot of aggression. Even people, you know, you may have heard of case law where people murder people or drive a car into people and they don't remember.
Wow.
Or they even have psychosis, florid psychosis. And you see your colleagues running helter-skelter, wondering what's going on. And you're like, no, this is okay. It happens for like 5 days after their seizure, after their status epilepticus. Just keep controlling the seizure, you know, give them, you know, 5 milligrams of this and I'm checking on him every other day, right? once you start to work alongside your medical colleagues doing that kind of consult liaison work, they suddenly realize, all right, so patients aren't just obstetric patients or gynecological patients or surgical patients, lots of them can also become psychiatric patients, right? It's just something that you start to appreciate as you get into psychiatric practice, that there isn't that much of a divide between the medical and the psychiatric. And only, I would say, about 50%, if you're lucky, to 60% of your patients would fit neatly into the, this is a chest infection, take this antibiotic and they're fine. You find very quickly after you start practicing that what traditional medicine training prepares you for is only for 60% of your patients. They're going to be another 30 to 40 that you don't know what you're doing with them, except you start to become more comfortable learning about how do I do psychotherapy? Mm-hmm. How do I actually dig deeper into early life experiences that may be traumatic? How do I factor in questions about their mental well-being so that they can actually open up to me about this chronic pain that is actually not pain at all? Mm-hmm. It's more psychological pain because there's no real anatomical location. But if you don't have that, and if you're not aware of that as a physician, you're never going to be able to offer that to your patients. Or what is this epilepsy that is not responding to any of the anti-epileptics that I've tried? What do I do now, right? So I think it's really important to be aware as a medical student of those things. Mm-hmm. I think medical school just prepares you with the factual knowledge, mm-hmm. but that's easy. Every doctor is smart. If not, you won't get into medical school. The part that we doctors really struggle with are the softer things because no one prepares us for them. And I don't think they come naturally to us either.
We really appreciate it. It's been really eye-opening for me and super insightful. You've totally busted a lot of my myths about what it's like to work rurally. So thank you so much.
No problem. Like someone told me, why don't you just come away from the city, give yourself 3 years, you know, work in a rural place. And then if you still hate it, for sure you'd have enough money to go buy that big house in the city and go back. But a lot of people don't go back.